I'm going to begin side two of this broadcast, and as I say, I hope I get to Grace Kelly. This is tape number 563, September 20th, 1982. Starting in 2 weeks from now, October the 4th, the broadcast is going to be from 8 to 9 in the evening. It's not going to be 7:30 to 8:30, so in case you miss a program next week, keep it, mark your calendar, put a note around the house or all over the house and call your friends and make a note. We will be on the air. I will be on, Mae Brussel, from 8 to 9 on this program instead of 7:30 to 8:30. That may even be easier for some of you who listen. That hour may be easier than the half hour. Well, Jamal was assassinated. Nobody yet has claimed responsibility, but I'm sure that the kind of person he was brought that death upon him and upon his family, and it will continue to happen if his brother becomes president until there's somebody in there who represents all of the people. There will be a bloodbath in that area. It isn't possible to satisfy everybody, but you can try to get closer and not have somebody with such a track record of violence. Incidentally, Jamal has relatives in Houston, Texas. And there's an article in the Houston Post, he has a cousin there, and they spell their name differently. They spell it J-A-M-A-I-L. And the cousin, Joe Jamil, is an attorney. And he said that he told his cousin over in Lebanon to change his name so that he wouldn't be associated with the past family, that he should have changed the spelling, and then he would have disguised himself. I doubt if that would have worked. If your brothers and you are controlling the banks and the narcotics and the army and the hit teams, it doesn't matter how you spell your name, you still have a little bit of blood dripping around. Incidentally, the man who instigated the raid against Lebanon June the 6th resigned this week just before the massacre. Major General Yitzhak Hofi, H-O-F-I, resigned after 8 years as head of Israel's Mossad. And again, where does a man, the head of the Mossad, come from? Mr. Hofi, in Counter Spy, this last issue that I referred to with the El Salvadorian torture and the Green Berets, they have a long article on documents taken out of Iran regarding the Mossad and the CIA. When the hostages were taken in the embassy, the people there took the shredders, the pieces that gone through the shredder, and put them together. And this information is available in Europe. And they had information on Major General Yitzhak Hofi, H-O-F-I. And he was director of Mossad. It gives his biography. But he was trained in the United States. He attended the United States Army Command and General Staff College in the mid-60s. He visited the U.S. on many occasions. In 1968, he inspected police units and participated in Army exercises in Uganda, you know, getting ready for Idi Amin, and you know what went on there. He wasn't there when Amin was there, but he was working with the police there. He also traveled around some interesting countries, which they list, because these countries are where the Nguyen Bank had set up their headquarters in the same time period. He traveled to Hawaii, Japan, Hong Kong, Bangkok, Tehran, and in 1970, and then went to Singapore on undisclosed business. This is the head of the Mossad. So the massacre followed after he resigned, but he may have gotten out with an inkling of what was happening. He was in charge, according to the Houston Post, of the invasion of Lebanon this last June the 6th. He just retired, and coincidentally, there was an article about him and his role being trained in the United States. No matter where you go, wherever there are these tragedies, these people have been trained at the colleges in Panama, the military schools, the police, the torture academies, the United States war colleges. This country has so much to change and so much blood on its hands that it is a terrible tragedy, as I say. And we, in some way, it's got to stop. It can't keep going. Now, there's one source of activity, a pope, Pope John Paul II, who should, again, be the inspirational leader for the largest religious group in the world. But he came in at a time when the headlines in Italy were saying that John Paul I was murdered, poisoned, the 30-day Pope. He took the name John Paul II. This week he was smiling with Arafat. They were kissing hands, and he welcomed him to the Vatican. Why would he do this at a time that is so volatile? The Vatican has never recognized Israel when Israel was a country that wanted peace and not war. They were never recognized. The Vatican has always recognized the PLO, and now they were physically entertaining Arafat at a time when Jamal was dead that same day, and incidentally, when Sadat was murdered by Mubarak and the CIA in Egypt, Arafat was entertained in Japan. That was his first royal visit as a head of state, as a dignitary, full accord, was in Japan. So that when one person who recognized Israel was murdered, Sadat, Arafat was in Japan. Now Jamal was hesitating and working with Begin on the recognition of Israel. When he was murdered, Arafat was at the Vatican. Simultaneously, in the newspaper this week, while he was being entertained, there was an article by one of the warriors of the PLO security chief. His name is Salah Khalaf. He is on the air all the time, and he has two names. He uses the Voice of Palestine radio. He's also Abu Ivad, and he was vowing that there would be an unmerciless underground war against Israel. He reputedly was the mastermind of the massacre of the 11 Israeli athletes. Carlos, who was behind that, working with the CIA and with Wilson and Turple and Korkala. Carlos was supposed to be in Lebanon this last week, and one of the masterminds who's still on the radio was vowing that they would rub Israel in the ground and they would never be recognized as a state. And he was on the air at the same time that Arafat was kissing the Pope. Now, some Jewish organizations began to respond very childishly, accusing the Pope of the Vatican at the time of World War II of being not sympathetic to the Jews. The main point is not what was going on with the Vatican during World War II, because this Pope wasn't even a priest. He was working for IG Farben, for Solvay Chemical, at Auschwitz. And when the arrangements were made for, whether it was the Ustashi in Yugoslavia or the Croatians and the brutal terrorist activities that were under the direction of the Vatican, whether Adolf Hitler was working with the top Nazis, doesn't affect this Pope except what this Pope is doing now. As a matter of fact, a listener to World Watchers gave me one of these anti-Catholic comic books, but in amongst the text, and it's written by a real Jesuit priest who left the church, he has photographs and documents with the sources of information of various people in the church working with the Nazis, interestingly enough. And one of the pictures shows Cardinal Pacelli, who was in Berlin, who later became Pope Pius XII. That's the one that the Israelis were complaining about now. And he was sitting with Franz von Papen, head of Hitler's inner circle, and he swore that Hitler would bring the Third Reich, that it would be the first power, the Vatican would be the first power, that the principles of the papacy were involved between Hitler, von Papen, and also Mussolini. And in the photograph, with Hitler's top people and with Mr. Pacelli, over in the corner is a Mr. Montini, who became Pope Paul VI. Now, Montini was present with von Papen and with Pacelli and with the Hitler group, but Montini was to become the mentor of this John Paul II. And if you want to understand his vow, say, to help people wipe Israel to the ground, to kill the Jews, he had a taste of it, again, as a world leader at Auschwitz, working there while the exterminations were going on. The question isn't what was the Pope doing during this era. The question really is what was John Paul II, not the Pope Pius XII Pacelli, but what was the other one doing? Now, Time magazine and the London Observer both had articles this week on the Opus Dei. I mentioned that at length either last week or the week before. In the religious section, it's not Time, pardon me, it's Newsweek. It's called John Paul's Shock Troops, and it tells about the loyal people to John Paul II and how the Jesuits are too liberal-minded, and that the Opus Dei, meaning God's work, will carry on. And John Paul II believes that these people will keep conservatism, and as I say, the Middle Ages and the Inquisition, safely in his hands if he could have his way. And this is an article about John Paul II seeing them as a wave of the future to put down any liberal ideas that are in the heads of Catholics around the world. It gives the origin of the Opus Dei that I've had on this program starting in 1928, and it tells about the use of flagellation and the leather whips and the chain mail bands around the thigh and waist. I'm wondering, when I read Vicki Morgan's explanation of her treatment and her Marquis de Sade with Alfred Bloomingdale, if he was a lay Opus Dei member and that the whips and chains were part of his religious cult, because this, she says, she was paid to do this, this was a necessary part of his daily treatment. And this week, incidentally, again, high society with Alfred Bloomingdale, she says that she was in on cabinet appointments in the White House, on contributions to Ronald Reagan, that she was with Alfred Bloomingdale daily, and that he would call her from 5 to 15 times a day, and that she was part of the inner circle of the real White House appointments and funds. She knows who gave what, such as Lysia Jelly or Michael Sindona or the Opus Dei to Ronald Reagan's administration. Vicki Morgan will get a settlement from the White House because it involves the White House, and it isn't just sex with her and Alfred Bloomingdale. It wasn't. Now, as I say, the articles about the Vatican was outraged by Israel charging silence on the Nazis. They missed the point. You simply can't get to the Jewish organizations to investigate the Pope. So I guess that they're dumb enough that they're going to have to learn the hard way and take a lot of insults and obvious entertainment of people who want to wipe them out. And if they're wiped out, I guess in the end they probably deserve it for being so stupid. Tomorrow night, and many of you get this tape a week later, up to a week later, so you might have seen or might not, but for local people, tomorrow night there's going to be a program on NBC, Did the Russians Plot to Kill the Pope? If you're interested in the broadcast I did on the assassination attempts on the Pope, you can write to me and I'll give you the tape numbers and you can order them separately. This kind of thing is like NBC and CBS and ABC doing how Fidel Castro planned to kill John Kennedy, and all of it was lies and all of it was propaganda. And I'm sure that Mr. Mohammed Aja and his cohorts would like, in return for leniency, say that Russia sent them. But the Soviet Union knows they had nothing to gain by shooting the Pope, and Castro had nothing to gain by shooting John Kennedy. And if Fidel Castro killed John Kennedy, then the Russians shot the Pope. It's propaganda. The system works. The television is also manipulated by corporations like IG Farben, multinational corporations, ITT, the sponsors, who put up this kind of crap. It is propaganda. It is bull. It is open lies. It is childish. It is non-productive. It is brainwashing. It is dangerous because they pervert everything that happened, whether it was the Manson family, the SLA, the Kennedy assassination. They're even going to reproduce the murder of Sadat. They said they're going to use doubles. Well, I think it would be hard to use Sadat, so I assume they would use doubles, but they're going to even have a television series. So for all time, when everything else is erased, your children and grandchildren can pull out tapes annually, semi-annually, and history will be packaged in these tapes that were nothing but lies, and there's not enough money or time to get to people to show them what is the difference between propaganda and all that crap. They'll go into the fact that he picked up a gun in Bulgaria, but they're not going to tell you where he was in Spain for several weeks or how he lived in Frankfurt, Germany, or why He was linked to the Nazi group in Lebanon where he was trained, and that was a headquarters for Nazis, as well as the PLO, if there's any difference. Incidentally, the Houston Post has an article, two more items on the Pope, and then I will do a little on Grace Kelly. The death of solidarity, Poland's Roman Catholic Church writes off the trade union. Finally, Houston Post, September the 11th, it says the Vatican has put $12 million into Lech Walesa. He was too soon. He wasn't a real leader. They go into the fact that the labor union was contrived, that the Vatican wanted this to happen, that John Paul II these days is mourning for what he considers the death of solidarity. His dream was to export successful, moderate trade unions. Well, the Soviet Union has another opinion, and again in the Houston Post, they say Polish union chief accused the U.S. intelligence contacts that Solidarity people met in Rome, met in London, met in Washington. Millions of dollars were poured through the AFL-CIO, and there will be trials going on in Poland soon on this matter. When the Solidarity came into existence, when the Russians clamped down on them, I did one or two broadcasts on Mr. Brown and Mr. Livingston, Jay Livingston, and the connections going back to Reinhard Gehlen, the Nazis, the AFL, the CIO, the phony money just to needle the Soviet Union. If the United States, if Western world had poured in, which they did, billions of dollars, like $22 billion into Poland, if they had started a shoe factory, if they had started a housing industry, if they had started sausages, anything that we could trade where we would buy from them and they would sell to us, we could buy Polish dresses or Polish potatoes or whatever they sell, the people would be better off. The money went down to Lech Walesa, it went into weapons, stockpiling of food. Walesa is not going to make it. He wasn't a leader. In fact, I never did put on the air his interview in Playboy magazine. He's such a hype. Again, he's a world leader, such as I've been mentioning, like Marcos and Gospodet and Mubarak and Princess Grace. I shouldn't put her in that category, but we give her such a high title when she dies. And Frank Sinatra is saying she was born a queen. What would he know about a queen? I was just reading something of Westbrook Pegler, the far-right journalist. I didn't bring it to the station. I'll share it with you next week, maybe. 1960, linking Frank Sinatra to Lucky Luciano, to the syndicate, to people who were murdered, to carrying weapons, to knocking people down. Pegler was saying, is the Kennedy group going to acknowledge Frank Sinatra, Peter Lawford, and the Klan? Because Sinatra is so tainted with various organizations and organized crime and the syndicate. How can the Kennedys be associated with this? Well, with a little bit of publicity and the kind of public relations that John Steinbeck was talking about in the book on Pippin, they create a Frank Sinatra who asked to go in and out of the front door of the White House, and he gets it. He put on the largest social event for Princess Grace in Monaco for the Red Cross. It was the who's who of what's what of social life in Monaco. He didn't even go to the funeral. She gave him that prestige, you know, in the palace and with nobility, but he didn't even go. The London Times this last Sunday has an article, the Sunday Times, on the war against the mafia. It's titled, "Will the Mafia Govern Forever?" And in effect, it's saying that Italy is sick and tired of the mafia, but the United States uses them, that they're a business and they're anti-communist. And America has a policy of using organized crime, even in our big cities. That's the price we pay, and that America isn't willing to give it up. And as long as it pours in to America from Southeast Asia, from the Middle East, from South America, as long as it's such a big industry for the mob bosses who pay the politicians to stay into power, if the presidents need the mob, and they all seem to need it, then the mob is here. And when we get sick and tired again of the murders and the crimes, which Italy's getting tired of, then it suggests that they'll do away with it, and that's what they decide they want to do. Well, I will talk a few minutes. I have 10 minutes more, and I'll talk a little bit about the accident of Princess Grace of Monaco, which, as I say, didn't come as a surprise to me, because as of July 19th of this year, I could see her and also the royal family of England getting swept into an abyss that it's very hard to extricate themselves. The families are involved in this web, and it's hard to save face when the criminals such as Edwin Wilson and Michael Sindone and Roberta Calvi and Licio Gelli, when Frank Turpel, as these people get caught and start to sing for their freedom, and the Nugenhand Bank gets exposed with its connections to London and Saudi Arabia. Remember, Michael Hand's still floating around, and it's making the front page 3 days in a row in the Wall Street Journal. When all these scandals are coming down, the Banco Ambrosiano and the 200 banks in Europe, the American banks, the new scandals of the Citicorp and the manipulations of the funds, if you've been reading that, they're missing millions of dollars and transferring on paper funds. As these scandals, the banking scandals unfold, they do bring these people down for many and various reasons. Now, when Grace arrived in Monaco on American ship to marry her prince, flowers rained down from Aristotle Onassis's private plane. Of course, he hosted Hallmar Schacht and Otto Skorzeny of all of Hitler's top team on his German-speaking yacht, where only German was spoken. No Onassis alive to go to her funeral. His son is dead. He's dead. Jackie wasn't there. I didn't see anything about her sister, the Princess Radziwill. High society was as interesting for who wasn't there or who was there. And as the newspaper article said, to one side sat a mix of pretenders to fallen thrones, royalty in exile, and assorted nobility. Now, there was a driver, a man, who was right at the spot when the car went over. He's a 62-year-old flower nursery owner. The car went over a cliff, 120 feet. He allegedly dragged Stephanie from the car, and then the princess was trapped behind the wheel. Well, what were the stories? Of course, it was brake failure right at the beginning. Again, the witness at the exact spot, it reminds me of detonating Orlando Letelier and Ronnie Moffat's car in Washington, D.C. It's very interesting on these winding, curving roads that somebody just happens to be there, manages to go down to put the fire out, the car's on fire, and extricate these people. Now, the person who rescued them said Stephanie was at the wheel. Then there was a contradiction. No, she wasn't at the wheel. It was Princess Grace who was at the wheel. It goes down 120 feet down the cliff. I think you all saw pictures of that. And there were discrepancies who was driving it. Stephanie wasn't driving it. She was trying to hold the brake and couldn't do it because her mother had a stroke. First articles, the brakes failed. If the brakes failed, let's see the car. If it wasn't the brakes, then look at her head. Then they said with a scanner that she had a small stroke, then she had another stroke. There were accounts that the family was with her when she died. There were other accounts that they called and said, should we turn off the machine? There's brain damage. She's not going to live. A priest had come to see her and didn't give the last rites, and in the first interview seemed to think things were okay, and then all of a sudden she's in this deep coma and she passes away. The Thursday evening television, shortly after the accident, this was September 16th, had a program called The Mystery of Grace's Accident. And also a newspaper right away, I think it was the San Francisco Chronicle, had a box the same day in the corner, mystery. Well, it took 20 years for the media to admit there was a mystery with John Kennedy, or Robert Kennedy, or Marilyn Monroe, okay? All of a sudden, they're catching on. And on the TV, last Thursday night, they asked questions. Was the family told the truth before she died? How serious was it when she went in? Why weren't they told? And how come she died so fast when they were told of these other injuries? Another question they asked was, how could a doctor from far away say she had a stroke? Some doctors came from Nice. They allegedly took a brain scanner, but the opinion was that in this condition it would be hard to tell what happened. They questioned on the TV the ability to recognize a stroke at that particular time. The accident occurred in France, but no French officials were allowed to see the car. They could not examine the brakes. That was brought up on television. I think it was Channel 2, which is LA. I was down in LA, so I think it was CBS down there. It's a different number than up here. The car was secreted to Monaco, where it was not officially examined. What would be the harm of asking the person who took care of the car last, you know, when did you have new brakes put in? Was it serviced? Checking out, you know, were the brakes put in last week, a month before? How often does she go over those mountains? I'm sure they're conscious of the fact that they need brakes when they're going from France to Monaco. You've seen those hills. Why wasn't the car seen? And these were questions asked right away by the news media. And then the official report was that she suffered a stroke, as I say, when Stephanie pulled the handle. And then it was changed. Stephanie drove. She didn't drive. She tried to hold the brake. She couldn't. Now, nobody has seen or interviewed Stephanie. She's not visible. Has she a broken spine? How bad is she hurt? Will she be at the hospital for, in quotes, psychiatric treatment? Will her memory be erased from the accident? Where was Grace when she went from France? Did she stop and see somebody, or who was she with? You see, one of the questions asked when Roberta Calvi was found dangling over the Blackfriars Bridge in London, the president of the Banco Ambrosiano, was who did he see in London for 4 or 5 days? And again, who was it that Princess Grace saw? Did she simply go to a summer home alone with Stephanie and no problems or anxiety, no strange telephone calls, no messages, and then she just happened to have a stroke, which a woman her age can have? Or was she under pressure, or did she receive phone calls? You're not going to know the answer to those questions, and neither am I. I think the case is closed if the car is not seen right away. If France can't have the car, if the doctors played it lightly and she suddenly turned bad, there will always be questions, as there were in the Marilyn Monroe death. And the answers won't come very fast, as I say, if ever. She missed the turn, the guardrail, and went over that cliff. Now, she was very active in Hollywood with William Holden, another fellow that died this year. She was close to William Holden and worked with Frank Sinatra before she sailed to Monaco. Princess Grace held the Grand Cross of the Order of St. Charles and the Grand Cross Merit of the Sovereign Order of Malta in Monaco, as does Henry Kissinger. And several weeks ago, when Alexander Haig resigned from the State Department or was fired after the trip to Europe when Roberta Calvi was murdered, he also belonged and tried to resign from this same secret order from Malta, from Monaco. She belonged to the Order of the Sovereign Order of Malta in Monaco, and that group have been under suspicion since Licio Gelli fled, and now that he's back, goodness knows what he's saying, and there is death to people who talk. This is a vow of silence, and if you talk about those secret sovereign orders, you can be murdered. It was the San Francisco Chronicle that had a big box, 4 inches by 4 inches, Grace accident puzzle. Monaco mourns Grace and questions the wreck. As I say, people are getting smarter. This was within 2 days of the accident. They were questioning what happened at this particular time. Now, the prince was suffering, according to current stories in the Chronicle. Two of his closest friends died recently, and it doesn't say who. And Princess Grace was close to Ingrid Bergman, who passed away from cancer, but that really didn't have too much to do with the story. Now, Princess Grace, you know, was on the board of directors of Pebble Beach, our own little local corporation, with Henry Kissinger and Gerald Ford and Madame Chenault of the Flying Tigers and Air America and the Nugent Hand connections. I'll do more about the conspiratorial links around there. She was on the board of 20th Century Fox that was sold to Marvin Davis. So therefore, our Princess Grace, who died, was on the board of Pebble Beach Corporation. She's gone, and I'll do more next week, but the other news was very important for me to touch that was happening around the incident when she had this mysterious crash. This is Mae Brussel. It is time to close now. I'll be back with you next week. This is KAZU-FM in Pacific Grove, California. And remember, 2 weeks from now, the program will be on from 8 to 9 instead of 7:30 to 8:30. You take it easy, and I'll be back with you next week.